The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host, and we are rolling right through our All 32 series, where we take a look at every single team in the NFL, deep dive with a smart person who knows a lot about the team. This week, we are breaking down the NFC and AFC East, the Cowboys and Dolphins. We have no particular order for this, obviously. Cowboys and Dolphins on the first day, and now we have the Giants. We're going to talk to Matt Lombardo of New Jersey Advanced Media, or is it NJ Advanced Media? How do you say it exactly, Matt? At Matt Lombardo NFL on Twitter. Thanks for doing it, man.
Of course, Will. It's NJ Advanced Media, and of course, the Star Ledger, and the Twitter handle is at Matt Lombardo NFL.
The Giants are a fun team to talk about because Dave Gettleman. That's all. Yeah. I am curious. Like, Gettleman has gotten himself in such a pickle. It feels like that. Do you think that he has to make the playoffs? They have to make the playoffs to save his job, or can they just have a decent season and Daniel Jones looks awesome?
Yeah. Well, I think it really comes down to the development of Daniel Jones, right? Because if you look at and it's really a two-horse race at the top with the Cowboys and the Eagles, who, if you look at their rosters top to bottom, are just much more talented and further along in their development than the Giants are. But if the Giants can knock off the Eagles once, maybe split with the Cowboys, sweep the Redskins, win seven or eight games, and feel like there's positive momentum building into 2021, and Daniel Jones can cut down on the turnovers, which were the issue that plagued him throughout his entire rookie year with the 11 interceptions and 15 fumbles that he lost, then you can start to feel good about the direction of the franchise, especially after the draft this year where you get your franchise left tackle, plug some holes depth-wise on defense. That's the type of scenario where I think Dave Gettleman can save his job going into 2021. But if the wheels fall off, if Jones proves to be just a turnover machine, if Joe Judge, it looks like it was a mistake of a hire, which I think there's a lot of optimism and rightfully so about Joe Judge, but if the Giants go 3-13 or 2-14 again, not only do I think Dave Gettleman's gone, but I think you have a lot of soul searching throughout that entire organization about the quarterback position, the coaching hire, and everything, because then that would just mean that this franchise has become mired in the muck of what the Cleveland Browns and Cincinnati Bengals have become, rather than one of the crown jewel heritage franchises of the NFL, which they were for a long time.
It's crazy to say that, but you're not wrong. Like, the Giants have two Super Bowls since 2007, and it's easy to sort of fall back on that. But all of a sudden you get to 2020 and you're like, okay, it's secretly been 10 years since that Super Bowl run. And Eli took down the Patriots for the second time. I sort of feel like with this roster, and this is such a dangerous place to be in the NFL, that Gettleman feels like he's making win now moves that are almost maybe built out of desperation, like the Leonard Williams thing. It makes no sense. Like, why would you trade that pick for him and then have to franchise tag him? I like Andrew Thomas. I think he's a very good prospect, but like even dating back to Nate Solder, like he felt like he needed to shore up the line. So he paid him and now you got to draft Thomas. And it was like a safe, DeAndre Baker, he reached for him a little bit in the first round when there were all field concerns and now this stuff is popping up. I mean, does it seem that way? Like it's sort of like everything's out of step with how they're handling it, where they used to operate as a very functional and straightforward organization that planned for the long haul?
Yeah, well, I think if you date back to 2018 and the Saquon Barkley pick at number two has been litigated over and over again, but that was really the dawning of Dave Gettleman and the Giants trying to win while building. And I think we saw over the last 2 years, and John Mara, the owner, certainly admitted that by pulling the plug on Pat Shurmur after two seasons, that that was a flawed philosophy. I believe that they hung with Eli Manning too long. I think that if Daniel Jones works out as a franchise quarterback that they chose last year, then a lot of those wrongs will be forgiven, because that means if you have a franchise quarterback who's a top 15 quarterback in the league, that means with the weapons they have around him, you're going to be in a position to compete pretty quickly here in the NFL, because the quarterback position matters more than all else. But if you look at the moves that they've made this offseason, I believe they have the fingerprints of Joe Judge all over them. And I think you look at Joe Judge exerting a lot of control over the draft, where cornerback was a position of need. They took two corners with Darnay Holmes and Chris Williamson. You look at linebacker, arguably the weakest linebacking core in the league a year ago. You sign Kyler Fackrell, Blake Martinez. You draft three linebackers late in the draft. You get Xavier McKinney, arguably the number one safety in the entire draft in round two. And you start to see, okay, there is and a dawning of a young core on defense that's worthy of the young core that they built on offense around Barkley and Jones and Sterling Shepard and Evan Engram. So I think this year is really a transition year for the Giants in a lot of ways, where a lot of that old thinking of trying to put a Band-Aid on the holes was ripped off this offseason, and they're finally committed to building through the draft and supplementing through free agency rather than going the other way around, as you alluded to, with signing Nate Solder, trading for Alec Ogletree, and some of the moves that really blew up in their face, signing Jonathan Stewart off the free agent scrap heap a couple of years ago. Yeah. Just a lot of moves that didn't work out when they thought they were a lot closer than they really were. I think they've realized this is a rebuilding franchise at this point, but we have a young quarterback in his second year. The window isn't as wide as a lot of people believe, because Saquon Barkley is going to get paid probably towards the end of this season, if not before next season. You have a limited window with a rookie quarterback, but they've made the moves, I believe, to put enough young talent around their quarterback and their running back to push for a playoff spot, if not this year, next year and beyond, if Jones turns out to be the guy.
Yeah, if Jones like takes a step forward, and like there's a lot of positives. I mean, I know that the fumbles is a big issue and plenty of picks as well, but I mean, like, there are a lot of positives from Daniel Jones, and let's not kid ourselves either. Like, he took a, like, look, Duke is a great school. I live near Duke. It's a fantastic academic, like, institution, and it's actually a pretty good football team that David Cutcliffe has done a good job building. It's still Duke! Like, and you're going to the NFL from there, right?
Yeah, it's a pretty good basketball school too. I mean, So, I mean, you look at Daniel Jones last year, and again, I think the turnovers are the biggest issue, not only for Daniel Jones, but the trajectory of the entire franchise, because that needs to get fixed if he's ever going to be a top 10, top 15, or top 5 quarterback in the league. But I did see a lot that I liked. You point to a couple throws last year in the snow to Sterling Shepard in the corner of the end zone against Green Bay. There was a 4th-and-18 throw, which I think was his most impressive pass of the season against the Bears, pocket collapsing all around him. Threads the needle into a tight window on what I believe is like a 23-yard touchdown pass in the back of the end zone to Golden Tate. And then all the way back to his first start, week 3 against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the game, the go-ahead, which wound up being the game-winning drive, and the touchdown run to seal it. Those are all plays and moments that you look back, and if I'm Joe Judge and I was deciding whether or not to take this job, those are the plays that you watch and say, okay, I can build around this guy. I can work with this guy. There's a foundation there for him to become a franchise quarterback. And I think they've developed a tremendous support system around him. When you look at bringing in Jason Garrett and everything he did to develop Dak Prescott and the numbers that Prescott has put up over the last couple seasons in the regular season, you bring in Jerry Shablinski, who was the quarterback's coach for Tom Brady and for Jimmy Garoppolo in New England. And you bring in a guy like Cooper Rush, who was a backup quarterback with Jason Garrett, to kind of translate the ins and outs of the system, because this is a rookie quarterback going into his second season with a new staff and a new scheme. You have these strong quarterback voices around him that the foundation is there, so the support system is there, and Jones seems like he has the temperament and the work ethic to make it happen. But that's going to determine just how quickly the Giants develop into contenders, how quickly Jones develops into a franchise guy, if he does.
What do we know about Joe Judge? I mean, I was hesitant to criticize or praise the hiring when they got it. I mean, look, he's got a pedigree of working with Nick Saban and Bill Belichick. When those two guys trust you to operate parts of their organization, then I think it speaks highly of you. But at the same time, like, we just don't know a lot about him. He's been very impressive this all season. What's your sort of general take on Judge so far?
I think the Judge has really exerted a lot of control over the entire franchise. I think you look at the draft, you look at free agency, a lot of those picks and a lot of those signings are the type of moves that you would think the head coach was making. And you look at cornerback and linebacker, two positions with a lot of young talent and some aging veterans that just didn't work out for the former regime. They cleaned house of those guys. Or in the case of the cornerback position, they drafted guys that seemed to fit that profile. You listen to Joe Judge's his introductory press conference, and he gives off the vibe of being an authoritarian taskmaster, which if you're going to act that way, you need to prove that you can win quickly or you're going to lose your locker room. And you talk about, you know, his initial conversation with Andrew Thomas after he was drafted and the other draft picks before they got on the call with the media. He laid down the law and said, I don't want to hear comparisons to other players. I don't want to hear you talking about Super Bowls. I want you to come in here, put your nose to the grindstone, get to work, and really don't create any distractions or unnecessary conversations that you have to deal with later on. So I think that Joe Judge is exerting a lot of control. And I think that the fact that he has influence, as you alluded to, well, not just from working at Patriot Place with Bill Belichick, and we've seen a lot of New England Patriots assistants go elsewhere and fail in their new programs, but working under Nick Saban, some heavy influences from his days at Mississippi State and coaches that he's worked with along the way, if he can take all of those influences and put them together into his own style, I think he's going to be successful. But if he tries to be, you know, Bill Belichick Jr. and the next Matt Patricia or the next Romeo Crennel or Charlie Weiss, it's just not going to work. So we're going to see a lot from Joe Judge this season based on how he conducts himself, whether he's going to be a success or a failure in the NFL.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll look at some of those spots on the depth chart that might be a big focal point for the Giants this season.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Okay, so diving in, Matt, a little bit maybe like a little more specific, I guess, if you want to. I mean, is there anything that stands out to you from a depth chart perspective, like battles that you're already sort of watching? Because it feels like offensively everything's, I mean, maybe with the exception of the offensive line, like everything's sort of laid out, right? I mean, like, you know who these receivers are. I mean, you know, Darius Slayton established himself as a rookie. Sterling Shepard somehow played 5 years in the NFL, or maybe 4 years. Golden Tate's there. Evan Engram can be a special talent, in my opinion, if he can play a full season. Daniel Jones, no challengers there. And you have Solder, Will Hernandez, and Andrew Thomas, Zeitler. I mean, it feels pretty laid out on the offensive side of the ball, right?
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. I think the only position to really watch on offense is whether Andrew Thomas opens training camp, whenever that is, and this season at left tackle or right tackle. Mm-hmm. And when you invest the number 4 pick in the NFL draft on what the scouts and executives and talent evaluators that I spoke to throughout the process called the most pro-ready and most talented overall offensive tackle in this class, in my opinion, well, you start him at left tackle and you move Nate Solder to the right side.
Agreed.
But chatter about putting Thomas at right tackle and leaving Solder on the left side. I think that would be a mistake when you look at Nate Solder's performance over the last two seasons, giving up 58 pressures, double-digit sacks last year. He just hasn't lived up to the contract, and if you're trying to protect Daniel Jones and open up running lanes for Saquon Barkley, if you've invested the number 4 pick in the draft in an offensive tackle, you start him at the left tackle and you move Nate Solder to the right side, and you hope that Matt Peart can develop over this season to ultimately replace Solder in 2021, or you go back to that well in next year's draft if it doesn't work out. So offensive tackle is really the only position that I'd even keep a cursory glance at during training camp.
So do you think that – I agree with you completely, especially because, like, Andrew Thomas, it's not like he flip-flopped back in college. I mean, Isaiah Wilson, who the Titans drafted in the first round, was Georgia's right tackle. Like, I mean, you know, and this – if you're asking this guy to come in after playing left tackle for Georgia and then to shift to right tackle and leave Nate Solder, who is a veteran who I would assume is more likely to be able to handle that transition and who's probably gone after 2020, if we're being realistic and looking at the cap situation, he's going to get cut. Do you think that it speaks either way to, like, how the Giants feel about, like, I guess what I'm saying is, like, if they put Thomas at the left tackle, it doesn't speak like they're trying to go youth or anything. It just says they're trying to establish that, you know, that setup, right?
Right. And I think that anytime you take an offensive tackle in the top five picks, you're, unless he's a true right tackle, you're not taking him to be your right tackle. You're taking him to protect your quarterback's blind side. And you've seen Nate Solder fail at that for two seasons. And we've talked about it before. We touched on it earlier in the conversation. There's nothing more important and more telling to the trajectory of this franchise than Daniel Jones's development. So you cannot put him in peril. You can't put him in harm's way. And I think that if you start Thomas at left tackle and put Solder at the right side, it's a bit of a band-aid for the right side. And maybe Solder performs at a higher level on that side of the line. You just don't know. And you can spend a season developing Matt Pert, who you drafted, hoping that he would eventually develop into a starting caliber player.
Okay. Defensively, man, I can't get past this Leonard Williams thing. Like, it just drives me nuts. It was so short-sighted. I understand that you think that, like, if Leonard Williams gets to free agency, maybe you can't get him. I don't know. You're going to pay him. Like, you could have bought him in free agency. Like, I mean, he wasn't going to attract a monster contract given his production, even with his pedigree and his age, to give up that draft pick for a rental and then be forced to franchise tag him with Gettleman, I believe, saying even, like, I understand it. If we don't keep him, like, you guys are going to kill me. I mean, like, the whole thing felt dumb.
Yeah, I thought that trade, and I wrote about this multiple times, kind of underscored Dave Gettleman's lack of positional value and lack of valuing draft capital, really, in today's NFL. And when you look at applying the franchise tag, that in a lot of ways screamed of Gettleman valuing pride over sensibility. Because if you take $16.2 million, you can go and you can bid for Byron Jones and not have to, quote unquote, settle for James Bradbury at cornerback. You can go and you can sign one of the marquee pass rushers who are available, or you can go and sign one of the top offensive tackles that are available to finally solidify that line. The $16.2 million you invested in Leonard Williams, for a guy who isn't a true pass rusher, who's going to be a rotational type of player with B.J. Hill, who you took in the third round in 2019, it just didn't make sense at a lot of levels from both a football standpoint and from a value of draft capital standpoint. And I just look at that line. Yes, it might be a strength of the team when you look at Dexter Lawrence and you look at potentially Leonard Williams taking that next step, even though that's a real unknown. You really fortified a strength by trading for Leonard Williams last year for a chance to what? See him in your system for 8 weeks and gain his negotiating rights? It just didn't make sense to me. And I think that you really hamstrung yourself what you were able to do in free agency and limited the caliber of player you were going to pursue, knowing you had to pay him big money long term or commit $16.2 million to him this year.
What do you think the floor, what is the ceiling for the Giants? What is a successful season for the Giants?
I think if the Giants can win 7 or 8 games, Will, and you look at Daniel Jones and he throws for 3,800 yards and 32 touchdowns, less than 10 picks, seems like he really is developing in this system and in this scheme. I think you feel good about that and that John Mara, in all likelihood, will trust Dave Gettleman to stay around for at least one more year and see this rebuild through for at least one more free agency class and one more draft class. I don't know that that's all going to happen. I think there's a chance they could win 4 or 5 games again this year. And if they don't even reach that plateau, I don't know that Joe Judge is safe. I think that as of now, Joe Judge has all of the power. And I think that if there's any inclination that he was the right hire this year and there are even baby steps made, that he'll have heavy influence over whoever will be Dave Gettleman's successor. But if they go 2-14, which I don't think is what happens, but hypothetically, if they do, then I think there's a legitimate chance that Jason Garrett is the head coach in waiting. And Garrett really is sitting in the catbird seat of all of this, right? Because if this goes well and the Giants win 8-9 games, push for the playoffs, they have a top 10 offense, he's a head coach somewhere else next year, right? If they go 2-14 and it flounders and Joe Judge looks like he's overmatched and over his head, guess who the next head coach of the New York Football Giants is? It's Jason Garrett with a new general manager. So I just think that this is going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. I think there's enough talent there in place for the Giants to improve and take strides and make steps towards competing. But if they don't, it's going to be fascinating to see how John Mara reacts to all of this.
I don't know, Debo, if you could grab a screenshot of my face when Matt said that Jason Garrett could basically pull a coup in the Giants. Like, that idea is like, makes me so happy in a very like terrible, like it gives like this catnip, the idea that like, cause that's sort of what Jason Garrett did with the Cowboys. Like he rolled in and he was Wade Phillips' offensive coordinator, like kissing Susie Colbert, the old blog. You know, they used to like joke about that, like Jason Garrett's running through the halls, like undermining Wade Phillips. And then it actually happened. That would be incredible. It's a great point though. Before I'll ask you one more thing, because I didn't ask about Garrett before, but do you think that Garrett is, he philosophically, he certainly fits with what, you know, Dave Gettleman wants to do. He's going to run the ball. Does it worry you for the Giants' success that Jason Garrett, that the Joe Judge is like, look at the Cowboys offense and what they did. That's what we're going to do. It's like, I don't know if that's really what you want to do.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot to be excited about with Jason Garrett. Obviously, the caveat here is he doesn't have the Dallas Cowboys offensive line and he doesn't have Amari Cooper. But if Darius Slayton improves on his rookie year and becomes that deep threat, okay, now you're on to something. And I think that if the offensive line improves with Andrew Thomas, you can start to see philosophically high percentage throws to Evan Engram in a similar way to the way they used Jason Witten all these years, trying to use Darius Slayton in a similar role to how they used Amari Cooper, then that can kind of facilitate the development for Jones. But it has to work because the offensive line holds all the cards. If the offensive line is in tatters and Nate Solder just doesn't work out, and if Andrew Thomas somehow flops, then you're in a world of trouble, and you're talking about those doomsday worst-case scenarios that I talked about earlier in the conversations.
All right, Matt Lombardo, thank you so much for taking the time. This is an awesome conversation. The Giants, they're fascinating. Read him at Advanced Media, at Matt Lombardo NFL on Twitter. A great follow there. Thanks so much for taking the time, man.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.